Live from Mariah Carey's basement in Pismo Beach, California. It's the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. 30 minutes of hard-hitting, no-holds-barred discussion about the exciting and dangerous world of professional alligator wrestling. With your host, the oldest of the Ringhausen Brothers, author, statesman, inventor, the first banjoist for the New York Philharmonic, and the legal representative of the International Brotherhood of Professional Alligator Wrestlers, a man who's almost always on the nice list, Richard J. Ringhausen. And are you ready? Daredevil, marksman, sculptor, the seven-time world welterweight alligator wrestling champion and winner of the silver medal in alligator wrestling at the 1992 Summer Olympics in Barcelona, Spain. A man who can both wield and weld a sword. The youngest of the Ringhausen brothers and the star of your show, Alan Ringhausen.
Well, world traveler, good to see you again.
I'm not world traveler, just kind of neighborhood traveler.
What's new? Anything exciting new?
Well, you know, you're talking about travel. It wasn't really traveling. The wife and I were in St. Louis, Missouri. Since, you know, our podcast listeners are worldwide, I thought I'd clarify it. But anyway, we're over there and we're doing some shopping. We go to a grocery store, major grocery chain. No big deal. Yeah, right?
Right.
And so she gets the shopping cart and she engages in the process of shopping. And I said, go ahead and get started. I'll catch up with you, but I need to use the bathroom first.
So yeah, you were standing there at the comic book rack reading comics, right?
So I go to use the bathroom facility, and this is a major grocery store chain in the St. Louis area. So I go to use the bathroom, and I go, you know, it's a fairly good-sized bathroom. I get in there, and the stalls are, you know, high to where they go from, like, floor to ceiling. Basically.
So you can't crawl under it if you get locked in.
But yeah, I'm not in one of the doored off ones. I'm just in an individual stall. But the next one over is a closed off door, but I can hear the guy in there rattling around, whatever. And I hear him come out and I can tell that he has walked behind me, past me, over to the sink. And I hear the sink functioning, right? And so I finish my
as well it should.
And I turn around and go, like, I'm going to go to the sink. And when I get there, the guy who had been using the sink is standing there facing me, totally naked, head to toe. So I bypass the sink and motivate on out of the bathroom, still kind of in shock. And I go, I walk to the store and I go past, like, the manager's station. And as I'm walking by, I said, hey, by the way, there's a naked dude in the bathroom. And she kind of chuckles, uh-huh. And I said, no, there is a naked man standing in the bathroom. She said, in our store? Yes, in your store.
Somebody go do something about it.
she says, totally naked? I said, yeah, naked.
Like Adam.
Oh, my God. And so she picks up the store, and it goes to this, like, intercom and says, code 13, men's restroom. So then the security guys swarm it. So then I go join Sarah then and tell her what I've learned by visiting the grocery store.
Did she go dash into the bathroom?
She did not. And so then, you know, we circle around and finish up our shopping. As we're coming out, the security people are still standing there at the men's bathroom with the door open, trying to coax the guy out.
Well, sure you want him out, do you?
Well, I think you want him out.
Well, I know, but I don't think you want to just coax him out as is on natural.
No. I think they were yelling at him to put his clothes on and stuff. But, you know, they're standing up there. We're talking about cops, guns, you know, everything. But, you know, if a guy doesn't want to come out of the bathroom, he doesn't come out of the bathroom, right? I had added on to that story, actually. That all, everything you've heard up to this point is true. But then I told Sarah next day that the guy was in the news and that he had actually bolted out of the bathroom, still naked, ran across the parking lot, ran into a church, and the security guards chased him all around the church trying to apprehend him. And they finally caught him by the organ.
Wow. You took a really good story and tied it into a super old joke.
Okay.
You know what I was wondering when you told that story?
It still works, man.
When you told that story.
Okay, so here's my question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Here's my question. So when I'm in the bathroom with the naked man, yeah, I turn the corner and there, you know, we stand face to face for that, you know, just few brief seconds. And as he's looking at me, what is it is he expecting from me? Does he want my money? Does he want my clothes? Or does he just want me? Why does the guy do that?
That's an excellent question. You know, you've seen, did you ever see the episode of Seinfeld where Jerry's
on the subway?
Subway train and he takes a little nap. When he wakes up, the guy across from him is naked.
Yeah, sitting there with his newspaper, y'all, you know, just, all right.
And they end up discussing sports, I think, by the end of it. You know.
I think so.
So my question for you, first off, is did you discuss sports with the guy a little bit when he was in there? Say, hey, how are those Cardinals doing this year?
I did not hang around for any discussion of any kind.
So you were put off by his nudity. I've reached a stage where I don't even want to see myself like that in the mirror.
I was going to say, you know, public nudity of any kind, whether it's for whatever reason this guy had, or even if it's at a nude beach. Okay, so Sarah and I were in Toronto earlier this year, and we, right across from the main city of Toronto, there's an island that's a real recreational area. You have to take this shuttle boat, and it runs constantly back and forth to this little island, and there are no vehicles allowed on the island. You can ride bikes on it, or you can hike it, and that's pretty much it. And so we're walking along and go out. They've got a really large beach area, and it is clothing optional. And one of the things that I think I've learned about nude beaches is you don't really want to go there. There's nothing to see. I shouldn't say there's nothing to see at a nude beach, but there's nothing you really want to see as a nude beach.
They
and
say
people that are there are super comfortable with their bodies, but I'm not super comfortable. They're usually not. They're not movie quality. Okay.
The rule of thumb is that they say those who shouldn't do, and those who could don't.
That's a pretty good analysis of that. But yeah, I think that. Yeah.
To go back to your original story.
I think it's all very disturbing. What?
When you went back to your original story, I just have this picture of the guys in the back room when it says code 13, like riffling through a little guidebook going, 13, naked
public
guy
nudity,
in the bathroom.
Public nudity.
Does it happen enough that they have a special code just for that?
Well, you know, I was wondering about that too. And code 13 could just mean security needed.
Yeah, it could, but it could also mean naked guy in the bathroom. Like when you're staying in a hotel, do you like shout out to Sarah before you come out? Code 13.
But you know, I don't know. Maybe they got different levels of it. You know, like if it's a beautiful naked woman. In
code one,
it's code 10. It's a 10.
go 10 and then watch them all come tearing up from the back.
Right. Cameras in hand.
Now, Suzanne says that when she worked at the hospital, they had a whole, their codes were all based on color.
Code blue is a guy dying.
Code red means that someone stole a baby from the hospital, or some horrifying thing like that. But they had a whole rainbow of different colors of different types of things that could go wrong.
Do you have that list? That'd be great to have. We should get that list. And is it standard among all hospitals?
That would be a good question, too. Like you come in with a heart problem and they go, code orange, And then they come rolling out with all the machinery for that.
Yeah. But if you were knowledgeable of that, if this was released to the general public, then you're the dude sitting there and like, code orange.
I think I told you before that I went through the whole atrial fibrillation thing, right? AFib, they call it. And, AFib.
Blue, right?
AFib is the sort of thing you can live with your whole life. As it turned out, I got zapped back into rhythm, but you don't have to. I mean, you can live with it, just keep your blood thinned and, don't exert yourself. So, but I like to exert myself, so I needed to get my heart back in rhythm. But you don't have to. It's not going to kill you right away thing, right? But Sue and I didn't know anything about this. And the first time that it happened, I go to the hospital. And let me tell you something. You go to the hospital and tell them you've got any sort of heart problem, they go apeshit crazy. It's the only way to describe it. They immediately punk you down and, all the people.
Rip your shirt open.
All the people who are sitting in the waiting room, it's like a triage unit when you go to a ER in a city that there's all sorts of problems, and they decide what order you go. You go in and tell them you got a heart problem. You pop to the head of the line, man. And they reel out the machinery, the machine that goes bing, everything else and hook you up, And, pretty soon some doctor comes in and goes, it's AFib, it's not that big of a deal, but we're going to keep you overnight. And I'm like, well, if it's not a big deal.
Overnight?
I said, what if I just leave? I can just leave. It's America. You can't really keep me here. And they're like,
If I was the doctor right then, I'd stand up and say, go ahead.
Would you?
You're going to be that way? Go ahead. Go home. I don't care.
I know that that when they hook you up to the machine, it prints out that long paper that has the squiggly lines on it. The first time they did that, I said, can I have a look at that? I'd like to have a look at that. Oh, no. You're not authorized to look at that. I said, it's mine. I said, it's one of my medical records.
I'm probably paying thousands of dollars for that.
Exactly. It's the most expensive piece of paper that I own. I would like to have a look at it. Or you can't. So they call in another head nurse, the head of the ER, and she says, absolutely not. You cannot see that. They're standing there after, like 2 hours.
At what point did you say, do you know who I am?
I'm a troublemaker.
That's right.
Pretty soon the doctor wheels in, right? And he looks at stuff. I said, can I have a look at that paper? And the two nurses
stand there.
He says, sure. And they're like, well, doctor. He says, let him have a look at it. What's the difference?
Right. Like there's some secret society.
So they let me look at it. And one of them was kind of snotty at the end. The doctor's left, and she takes it back from me. Well, did you know what you were reading? Well, I went home. And I can read an EKG sheet now. I can tell whether I'm in sinus rhythm, whether I have a PRS wave. When I go get those tests now, they hand me the sheet. I know whether I'm in rhythm right off the bat. Don't even need a cardiologist to tell me.
So you're one of those guys now.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Great.
But apparently, according to Suzanne.
Like when you walk in, do they all whisper to each other? This is him. This is the guy that thinks he knows everything.
This the same way they act when I'm a code 13 in their hospital, wandering down the halls. I assume I still have that to come.
I see you're probably not far away.
Yeah, I know that. So that was an interesting grocery store story. I'm not sure that I have anything to top it. My question is...
But let me tell you now, I'm nervous to go into bathrooms, public bathrooms.
You weren't before? I thought you had a thing about that anyway.
No, it's public restaurants.
Oh.
I don't like to eat in public.
I understand that. My question, when you go to the grocery store with Sarah, your wife, generally speaking, do you like wander right next to her with the cart, or do you immediately like disappear and say, I'll meet you at checkout?
No, I stay put.
Do you have authorization to pick things off the shelf and put them in the cart?
Yes.
Like just wander down the aisle.
Rick, I'm not going to walk down the aisle and just fill the cart with candy.
That was my question. You're not Cousin Eddie just walking next to the cart picking up Twinkies and Ding Dongs and packs of cookies and sugary cereal?
No. You got to know your limitations. You do that when you're alone.
Like when you're going on a trip. You know what I've noticed is when we drive across the country, all the rules of good diet go out the window when you drive across the country.
Really?
Oh, yeah. We stock up on all forms of candy and sweets and cookies and Pop-Tarts and have a cooler of soda. And then for the next 3 days, won't eat a single healthy item.
Wow.
If we stop anywhere, it's McDonald's, you know. You know, it's kind
Rick,
of when
Rick,
you're driving.
Rick, you did just tell me that you have a heart problem, right?
Yeah, well, it's fixed. I take this fantastically expensive pill twice a day for the last 15 or 20 years.
Okay. I get it. All right.
Have you ever traveled across the country with a dog in a car?
God, no.
Never? I mean, you guys, like, take care of Nala, the wonder dog, don't you?
We do, but... she travels by airplane.
You have never put her in the back of the car and driven like 14 hours or so with her? Hauling a dog in a car is a wonderful thing. It's much better than hauling a baby. Have you driven a long way with a baby in a car?
Yeah.
What was that? What was that experience? When did you do that?
I don't know. When the kids were young, we drove long distances.
Is there ever a time when you did the long distance drive where if I asked your kids, did dad flip out at some point, that they would say, oh yeah, we were terrified?
Yes.
Mine was in New Hampshire. I don't know what it was that day that I just, it was like I had enough, and I had four of them, you know, and they're all in the van, and we had driven to New Hampshire, and it was time to set up the tents and stuff because we were still tent campers at that point, and it was raining. And I was in a bad mood. I have to go to confession for that day. I was in such a bad mood. If you ask the kids, they say, oh, yeah, New Hampshire.
California Coastal Highway, Highway 1.
Yeah. Drive that? We've got plans to drive it this spring.
Okay, it's a twisty, turny road that is like you're hanging on a cliff the whole damn time. It's fairly terrifying to drive it, right? And so I'm driving, and I'm all tensed up anyway. And the family gets to arguing about something, and then finally I just went full Chevy Chase on.
Oh boy, just like you were Brad Ringhausen.
I don't know that. That's a whole nother level.
You know, you just can't appreciate how angry you can get until you've driven like 14 hours in a real stressful area with a bunch of kids in the car.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nothing like it.
We had a van, a big shag wagon that we bought when we were younger and had two or three kids.
Can we refer to it as the shag carpeting van?
Yeah. It's a shag carpeted van. And it's got a bed that folds, or seat that folds down into the beds. And Sue's got it laid out with sleeping bags for the kids, you know. And we're going to drive all night to go to Yellowstone National Park. And
that sounds like fun.
It's set up to where there's a spot for each one of the kids to lie. And and the sun sets, you know, we're heading out. And Sue's like ready to set the thing up. And the kids decide that they don't want to sleep in that thing, that they would rather sleep sitting up. Well, that was another unhappy experience. It ended
so
up with
the kids. They rebelled against.
Yeah. Well, they lost that rebellion. They ended up sleeping on that folded down thing that we had bought. Yeah, it was a big, big, expensive van, you know, and the kids weren't even going to sleep in it the way it was designed to be slept in.
Wow, okay.
We straightened
that
out.
They thought they were going to force their will upon their parents.
Yeah, and that trip, too, the way that trip started out, it was kind of interesting. We had we got one of those things that you put on top of your van that to haul your junk in. Cargo carrier. And so we have a cargo carrier, and the way this one worked was that you put it on top of the van, and instead of bolts and stuff, this one had like a ratchet strap system that you strap this thing down to the bars that are on top of the van.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the bottom of the thing, it was molded plastic, and it was molded with a set of grooves that went from the front to the back, I guess, so that if it rained, water could go under it. So we're driving down the road, and I'm like, what's that sound? You know, and the kids, and I'm mad at them.
Whistling.
Anyway, it's like a whistle. What's whistling? You know, and it's just driving me insane. And finally, I cracked the code, because we slow down and the whistling stops. You speed up and it would pick up. So I figured out that it was the wind blowing underneath of that thing that was causing it to whistle. So we pulled over, and we didn't get to move again until we got a bunch of socks and stuff out of the carrier and rammed into those spots so that wind couldn't whistle through it anymore. So now problem solved, and we take off down the road again. And this time the whistling is gone. But now that the whistling's gone, you can hear like a high-pitched, like a clarinet. It's like, now what? Well, those ratchet straps that hold the thing down, right? They are lined up to where they face the wind as you're going through, and it's just like, as a kid, did you ever take a blade of grass and put it between your thumbs and blow through it?
Yeah, it was like the reed on a woodwind instrument.
It was exactly like the reed on a woodwind. And there were 2, 4, 6, 8 of them that were looped around holding this thing down. And as you drove down the highway, it blew a noise like a clarinet blowing. And this was after I got the pipes cleared out, you know, and then the woodwind section came in. So this time we pull over to the side, and we didn't get to move forward until I dug out a roll of duct tape and duct taped every one of those ratchet straps together to where the wind couldn't blow through them anymore. And then we moved forward. So the kids all decided that Dad was insane.
Okay, you know,
code red, man.
Sounds can play some real tricks on your mind. Recently it was deer season, and Brother Brad moved up to the apple market and was living there. And he had a spot in the back of the building where he had TV and DVD player and cooler, you know, like a refrigerator, and his fan set up where he was good to go. So one night, he decided that he would get ready for hunting in the morning early. So he went out, and he loaded the ATV on a trailer, a four-wheeler, right? So that he'd be ready to go in the morning. Comes back in, lays down on his cot, watching TV. As he's laying there, he hears the ATV start up outside. And he's like, what the hell is going on? He said, Alan must be out there putting the ATV back in the shed. And so he gets up, but in case it's not his brother, he has his gun and his boots on, and he goes out because it's like 5 degrees outside and snow on the ground. You know, it's freezing. So here he is out in the cold, nobody around, nothing in sight.
And the four-wheeler's on the trailer.
Four-wheeler's still on the trailer. So he's like, I don't know. So he goes back inside, gets his boots off, guns put away, and he lays down to start watching TV again. He's laying there for a little while. Next thing you know, four-wheeler starts up again. So he's, well, there's got to be somebody else out here. Somebody's riding around out here or something. So he gets his boots back on, his gun out, and he goes out, and he's now searching around the orchard behind the shed, and nothing. So now he's really frustrated and doesn't know, if somebody's messing with his head or if there's somebody riding around out there or what. So he goes back in and lays down. And for the third time, ATV starts up. He goes outside, rushes outside this time, to see who's out there. Nothing. So, now he's, going insane, and he's laying there on his cot, and he hears it start up again. And then, he, stops, and he's like, wait a minute. And goes over to the cooler that Dennis has in the back of the Avalmart. And Dennis had taken one of the shelves, a metal shelf, out of this, it's like a produce cooler, and he had leaned it against the side of the cooler, and it was vibrating every time the transformer inside the cooler would kick on. This rack on the outside would start vibrating, and it sounded just like an ATV engine.
And Brad ran out in the snow 3 times on it.
Yeah. So I'm sure that the metal rack got thrown against the wall in some fit of rage, but
well, I have to ask him about that.
Here's the one you really need to ask him about. So I show up at the Apple Market at about 5 in the morning, 5 a.m., because we meet there, and then we go out and hunt. And Brad's coming from the back, still a little bit groggy, getting ready to get dressed and go out, and pulls some money out of his pocket and lays it on the counter. I said, what's that about? They said, that's money for Dennis to replace the DVD player that I smashed against the wall last night. He said, that damn thing, he starts getting worked up again. He said, no matter what I did, the drawer on that would not open up to where I could change the DVD.
Hey, so, and you can only watch Space Women from Mars so many times.
Right. So, he had to replace the DVD player.
I know what to get Brad for Christmas. Or right. Dennis. Dennis, get Brad some tranquilizers.
Brad needs tranquilizers, or he needs to drink more or drink less, or some balance in there.
Indeed. Guess what time it is?
Howdy doody time.
It is howdy doody time, and with that, it's getting closer to Christmas. It's not Christmas yet, but so I won't say Merry Christmas. I'll just say see you later from Rick Gator
and Alligator.
This has been the Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour. The Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Hour is brought to you by Uncle Den's Roasters. Tastes just like chicken, but it's not. And by Dr. Ferd's Code 13. When you're hot, Code 13. No portion of today's broadcast may be reproduced without the express written consent of the North American Alligator Wrestling Association. And with that little bit of legal business in hand, see you later from Rick Gator and Alligator. This has been a Ringhausen Brothers Alligator Wrestling Network production. Accept no substitutes, because there aren't any.